Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership. We unlock the power of organizations and teams to overcome tough challenges, seize new opportunities, and turn bold ideas into real-world results through strategic planning, retreats, and team workshops. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Have you ever heard the saying, your reputation precedes you? Well, that's exactly the case with today's guest. Before I ever met him, I kept experiencing the ripple effects of his generosity and leadership. He graciously opened the doors of his facility to Cause San Diego, giving us a home for gatherings and even the launch pad for last year's Cause conference. Please welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD, John Lee.
Thank you, Jeff. Great to be here. And thank you for inviting me.
John is an entrepreneur, owner, and the driving force behind VentureX San Diego. At VentureX, John is reimagining traditional workspaces, turning them into vibrant hubs for creativity, culture, and community. John is on a mission to evolve the workplace, showing how community-focused spaces can engage employees, spark innovation, and build thriving companies' cultures. Ready to do this?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, for folks that don't know VentureX, can you give us a little expanded? What is it you guys are doing over there?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, it's a franchise. I'm part of a network of VentureXs that are all independently owned and operated. And we have our parent company called Vast Coworking, under which we are one of three brands. VentureX is the kind of the higher end model. And then we have a second brand called Office Evolution, which tends to be about half the size on average. And then we have a third brand that they just acquired last year called Intelligent Offices. Their bread and butter is mostly done on based off of like live reception service is where they get a lot of the revenue from, not off focus as much in office space.
All right, awesome.
As we are.
You didn't create this thing. It was already there.
Yeah.
You decided to jump in. Sound like a good thing to do.
Yeah.
So maybe explain a little bit what's unique about VentureX.
We are kind of a hybrid. We call ourselves a hybrid executive suite / co-working model. So that's one. And then two is we typically tend to be located in suburban hubs and not in business districts. So that's the big difference between us and a company like WeWork. We're all mostly in like areas downtown. Like downtowns and business districts, not just in San Diego, but across the world. That was always their target audience. VentureX was started in Naples by a real estate family about 12 years ago, I believe. And then eventually UFG, the parent company, bought them out a few years later and then started to franchise them out. And most of the locations typically tend to be in an area adjacent to a residential community.
Well, that makes some sense, right? You got all these people that look like me that actually I hate working out of my house. I'm in bagel shops, coffee shops all the time. Just I want to be in some other space other than my office at home. So
no, absolutely. And you know, COVID was like a game changer for not just the industry, but for VentureX as a model because of that.
When people got, oh, I get to go home and work. Oh, this is great. Then you realize, oh, it's not that great. So it's finding that kind of in-between space.
Correct. Correct. But they still didn't want to go back to the office and commute 30 minutes to an hour.
Right. Something local in my neighborhood.
So local neighborhood, you know, within a, you know, walking distance sometimes or bike ride or a quick car ride so that they can still go home for lunch or pick up their kids, you know, in the early afternoon and come back. And that's kind of where our sweet spot has been. And it's actually turned out to be, you know, I think the whole COVID, the benefits from COVID was obviously not intentional, but that's the way it ended up being.
We shouldn't blame you for COVID. That wasn't some business move you made.
Right, right. Well, I mean, initially, I mean, it hurt everybody.
Correct. Because they couldn't come to your place either, right?
Correct. The occupancy rate just plunged, not just VentureX, but across all spaces countrywide and obviously traditional offices as well. Coming out of COVID, we were one of the main benefactors from the new shape of the way people were working.
The way the world works today.
Correct.
So one of the things I love is I'm all about community. I'm all about collaboration, which I think we kind of suck at as a society in general.
Yeah.
You know, so why do you believe creating community is so powerful in the business environment? Because that's one of the underlying goals of yours, right? Is really trying to create community.
Absolutely. And before I started this, I was kind of questioning that myself. And then I got to see it firsthand over the last 2+ years. What happens when you get a group of people that are all striving to build a business, that own a business and are trying to grow it or start a business. When you see them interact together in completely unrelated industries, and you see that collaboration starting to come together where, you know, if you need legal help, if you need accounting help, if you need marketing help, if you need help with AI, for instance, that's a hot topic right now. Sure. And we have several people in our space that are well-versed in AI. And just from the natural socializing that you get from, you know, quote unquote, the water cooler or during lunchtime, you know, we try to foster those types of environments by doing certain events and also just laying out our space in a way where you can just naturally run into people. It becomes almost like, not even collegial, I want to say almost like a family. Mm. You know, because I personally have become very, you know, in a personal relationship with almost all of my members, knowing about their families and their jobs, their companies, their situations. Of course, you can't be everything to everybody, but I try to be.
So how do you facilitate that? So obviously you just spoke of layout, trying to make create situations, I guess, where people are bumping into each other and interacting in some fashion. What else do you do kind of proactively to make that happen?
Well, just going back to, let's just go back to 4 years ago when I signed with the franchise and then we started to look for the space. And then once we found the space, we started to do the space plan, the floor plan layout. I was very hands-on with that process. The way I kept envisioning it was you come into the space, you have this really nice open lounge area. And then after that, you kind of walk towards your offices in the back. I wanted to.
So you can't sneak in the back, is that what
you're saying? Well, you can. Some people just want to avoid that. So we do give them that ability to do that. But most people do want to come in and see some, you know, say hi to familiar faces. Yeah. Then we have the co-working area where people have memberships just to work in our common spaces. And most of them kind of gravitate towards there because that's when the actual work gets done. You know, you have like sit stand desks for everybody. You have monitors that we provide. So those get used a lot and they're getting very popular now. So you have people that work there almost exclusively. And then people that go to their offices or passing that area by, they're just natural, you know, bumping into each other, saying hello. You know, what almost everyone does just over the course of time by learning about their business. We offer lunches once a month, exclusively. The intention of that was to bring everyone together during lunch hours.
Break bread.
On the first Monday of the month, just to like meet your new neighbors or meet an existing neighbor that maybe you hadn't said hi to before, kind of learning about each other's businesses.
Do you facilitate that at all, or do you just let it kind of naturally happen?
No, we do. We started that program last year intentionally with this being one of the big intentions was to get people to kind of, you know, collaborate and not just professionally, but personally bring in breakfast every Wednesday. That's also another way for people to kind of get together and just whatever way we can get to people to just interact and collaborate is great to see.
So what does the demographics look like? I mean, what's the typical, I mean, are there actually businesses in there with multiple employees or is everybody kind of a one-off sole?
Yeah. So it's interesting. This industry, the co-working / executive suites industry was, I think the roots go back to the legal industry when lawyers, when they were starting out trying to create their own law firm, they couldn't afford to get their own office. So they would get these shared executive suites and then share the conference room, share the library and so on and so forth. So it has roots in that. And so historically, it's been used mostly by small, medium businesses, right? Solopreneurs, two-person operations, four-person operations, maybe slightly bigger, let's say 6 to 8. Since COVID, that's starting to change. And we've seen that firsthand. As companies started to come back out of COVID and try to get their people back in the office, they had a very hard time doing that, right? I mean, it's been a power struggle for the last 3-4 years between employees and employers that want to, you know, one wants one thing, you know, full work from home or full flexibility.
I want to see you every day, John. Correct. I know you're here working.
TL, return to office policy. Yeah. This is spreading across mostly from the big, large corporations and enterprise companies. Like I think Google has announced a return to office policy about 4 times since 2022. And each time they say, okay, this is it. This is it. And it still is not working. Clearly it's not working. That's why they keep trying to do it again. We've seen firsthand that now enterprise companies who are now have the ability to get out of that lease or maybe their lease comes to an end, they are now looking at flex offices as an alternative, especially if it's, they're in a city that's not their headquarters city. I'll just give you a perfect example. We have an enterprise client that it's a T-Mobile business unit. They came into us about 3 months after we opened. And earlier that year, before we even opened, they decided nationally to go full flexible policy. And what that means is that in every city, they have a team of 15, 20, 30 employees. that go out and sell their telecommunication services. They intentionally gave up, I think, about 90% of their offices nationwide, and they allowed every team in every city to go out and look for meeting rooms, day offices as they needed, because these guys are out in the field 2-3 days a week. Yeah, so they don't need
don't
to
really
go,
need to have an office.
They don't need to have an office. And they're paying so much money for these spaces that are being utilized 20 to 40% of the time. So they did this nationally. Luckily for us, the local San Diego team found us while doing that. And now they come to us exclusively. But before they did that, they had the ability to work from our office. They could have gone up to a place up in Oceanside. They could have gone to a place in Chula Vista. They were given a platform to do that. A year later, after doing this, the head of their real estate group did a full YouTube webinar, and they came out and they proclaimed they were seeing savings of up to 80% on their real estate costs. Now, that is pretty significant, especially for a company with the footprint of T-Mobile. You know, they're a few hundred billion dollar market cap company. To save that kind of, and they titled that video, the hybrid dividend, basically saying that
they has a payback in ROI.
They've given themselves a dividend, an extra dividend by going hybrid. So that's the biggest example. But we have a couple of other enterprise companies that have done that. They have local teams and they don't need their full dedicated office. And usually it's typically because their people are either they have the ability to work remotely from home or they're out in the field. So they don't need a full dedicated space for themselves. Pain point with those dedicated spaces, A, you have to commit for minimum 3 years, usually 5 to 10, sometimes even longer. You have to pay for all the overhead. You have to pay for, you know, everything from janitorial to internet service, all the stuff that we provide that they can kind of replicate and where they're only paying for what they use. You know, we have the other enterprise client that is using our space exclusively. They came to us from within our own building. They had a space next to us in our own floor, and their lease happened to end just in the first year that we were in business, and they saw us and they were like, wow, we can
move down the hallway and
do this ourselves.
Save some money. Yeah.
So they come in exclusively Monday to use our training room. The rest of the week, only 2 to 3 people come into the office that we set up for them. They were saving about 65% on their real estate costs by my estimate based on, and I think that's a conservative estimate. And now they've started to do this same model across the country as well, because they're seeing the cost savings and they're seeing that it hasn't done anything in terms of disrupting or hurting productivity. In fact, if anything, I think it's gotten better, because people, when they have that flexibility, they tend to be more engaged. And several recent studies have shown that the most engaged employees that you're going to get are the ones not from working from home fully, not the ones going into office every day, but the ones that have the hybrid option. You know, because human beings are social creatures. We don't want to be locked in a closet or in our own basement every single day of the week. Some people do, but not everyone. Vast majority of people do want to get out, rub elbows, and socialize a little bit. So for them, the happy medium is 2 to 3 days at some professional working environment. And that's what we provide.
That makes complete sense. Yeah. I mean, it's logical when you actually step back and look at the whole thing.
Correct. Right. You actually wonder why it hasn't been done before.
Or even why there's still some resistance today, right? Oh, yeah, get everybody back. When correct. It's like, okay, that's going to impact our employee engagement.
Correct.
Okay, great. We can see it, but you're not engaged. So did we win at this or not?
But I think it's starting to change, though. Like the companies, even the enterprise companies, are now starting to realize this, realizing that this is actually going to end up being not just beneficial for their employees, but beneficial for their bottom line as well. So you're going to continue to see this transition happen throughout the country, not just locally, not just statewide, but throughout the country.
Sure. Makes complete sense. At the end of the day, like you say, it's great for the employee. I don't have to be doing the commute all the time. At the same time, like I say, one of my biggest complaints about doing what I do is having the home office, but, you know, not having a place to go.
Yeah.
So now you got that place to go when you want to go and you want to engage.
Yes.
And then you provide the flexibility. Oh, we got the training room. Oh, we're having a meeting. Oh, we got a conference room, right? So all of a sudden you have access to all the things that you need when you need them, and not have them just sitting there idle 90% of the time. So
absolutely. Just this morning, I spoke to one of our members, and, you know, his term came up and I asked him, hey, do you want to renew? And he said, yeah, absolutely. I get more work done when I'm here. You know, just the productivity and the focus that you are in a professional environment. And I felt that firsthand when I was building out the space. It took about 6 months for the construction. And during that time, I actually had a temporary office that they gave me in the building. I could have done all of my work from home, but I intentionally went to the office, you know, 20 minute drive, and sat myself down in my temporary office surrounded by nobody. And I could feel that I could be so much more productive, not having the typical disruptions and distractions that you get at home.
Oh,
so
yeah. I mean, this morning I was like a new bagel shop opened up walking distance from where I live, and that's where I went. And hey, what's going on over here?
Yeah.
And I go home, I'm emptying the dishwasher, I'm walking the dog, I'm doing all this other stuff.
Yeah. Right? Delivery man is ringing the doorbell.
It's just this kind of general attitude I got. Just, I don't know, like a shift hits me when I get home. It's kind of interesting. You have like another success story. I mean, this obviously the business metrics and all that make a lot of sense of this, but kind of back to people coming together, the collaboration. You got a great story to share in regards to collaboration working, something you didn't expect to see happen, maybe amongst some of your clients.
I mean, that was obviously the biggest example, but I would say that personally, we have a member who does, she's a guidance counselor for college. So I've connected her with my sister and my nephew, and now she's helping her. And that's completely outside of business, right? That may be like a small example, but there's a lot of those types of examples that are maybe not in and of itself that big, but you just add them up over time and just like stacking Legos. And eventually you realize that, wow, there's just a lot of dynamic connections going on. And the thing with me, my whole mantra is remove as many pain points as possible for people. And what I mean by that is, I mean, you know, we have certain types of memberships. Right? We have the part-time, we have the full-time, we have private offices, we have dedicated desks. Those are like typically the main items in the menu. But there's a lot of times when people come in and they say, well, none of this really fits what I need. So I'm constantly making customized solutions for people to fit what they need.
It's not a one-stop shopping. You can come in and say, here's what I need.
It right? can't, yeah. Because if you talk to 100 people that come in the door,
they all got something.
You're going to get 100 different answers on what exactly they need. You know, some people just want an open desk. Some people will just want to sit on a couch in your cafe area. Some people actually want an open desk, but also they're on calls a lot, so they actually need a private room 3 hours a day. Some people actually just need a private office. They don't really care about socializing with others. You know, you just span the spectrum of personalities and people's needs, and you're going to get a million different answers. So you can't have a rigid philosophy on how you're going to sell your space. And it works great because I get a lot of positive feedback from that. Oh, thank you. You know, I didn't know you can do that. And, you know, it's, I think what I'm trying to like,
well, it opens your eyes too to like what's the marketplace
yeah,
looking
absolutely.
For.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. I didn't know what to expect when I opened it. Yeah. And you know, you just learn these things as you go, and you're constantly having to shift and constantly having to adapt to what the market's demanding.
So you described this as being a franchise model, and there's other units around the country, I take it. So
yes.
Is that part of the deal too? Or is that something you sign up for? Like, well, I travel to Atlanta or something, and so there's a space I can land in when I get there?
Yes. So we do give reciprocal rights for all of our members to use the space at those other facilities and vice versa. And by space, we mean like the co-working area. You get a table to sit at, you have the internet. Now, if you wanted to book a conference room or a day office, then you just pay what the
private space, yeah.
Yeah. Then you just pay whatever the hourly or daily rate is for that particular space. And we do the same. For the most part, if you're traveling, you just want to get into somewhere where you have internet, you can, you know, sit yourself at a desk, maybe get some coffee, all that that comes with like the whole community aspect of it. I mean, that's a common thing around the industry too.
Yeah.
Having that reciprocal right.
Well, like I said, I'm a huge fan of a collaboration. So I'm going to get a little teaser here. Sure. We were talking about the Cause Conference. I'm actually got a little 20-minute segment at the Cause Conference coming up on October 9th. Where I'm going to do kind of an ask give exercise, mm-hmm. where you just get people talking like, what do you need? You know, and you put that to a group of five people and someone might have the answer for you. And then we're going to have something where you're kind of wearing that all day. So throughout the day, people go, so what's your big thing? What do you need, John? It's like, oh, I need this. I'm like going over 300 people. Someone's probably got a solution for you. So I'm very excited about what that's going to look like.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Absolutely.
Well, one of the things I was on your website and you had kind of a whole list of different values. And one of the ones that jumped out at me because it's actually one of my personal values is authenticity. So what does that mean to you, John?
It's being able to show your vulnerable side to me. So one of the things that we do for community outreach is we offer up our space to like Cause Conference, but there's numerous numbers of nonprofits doing great work out there.
15,000 of them apparently.
In San Diego, yeah.
Yeah, crazy.
It's amazing. We actually have a couple of nonprofits in-house as well.
Okay.
And, you know, we're collaborating on a big, you know, fundraiser for them in November as well.
Nice.
But we get all sorts of nonprofits coming in and you realize how many people are struggling or need help out there. And there's so many great organizations doing so many great stuff, you know, whether it's children and refugees trying to go to college or, you know, first time college attendees because their families never had anyone go to college before. And then you hear these personal stories and it's just really touching and it really moves me. And, you know, I've cried in audiences before, which is not really, you know, something that I've historically done.
Is that your norm?
No, but you know, just authenticity is, you know, I don't try to be somebody else that I'm not. People know that I go out of my way to try and accommodate whatever they need. I think it's kind of hard to really say in just a couple sentences what that means to me. But I do know that if you ask our members, and that's, you know, my biggest advocate is our members, and they'll all tell you that, yeah, you know what? you go to John and he will, he maybe may not be able to help you. Maybe he may be able to help you. Maybe he'll give you his perspective, his own experiences, but I'm not going to BS you. And I'm going to tell you exactly what I feel is what you need and where I think, you know, I can help you. And if I can't, then I'll try and connect you to somebody that,
yeah, I love that.
I can help you.
You are who you are. Yeah. I'm trying to put on some big charade or something.
No, no. If anything, I'm probably sometimes a little bit too, I don't know, I wouldn't say humble is the right word, but.
Is there such a thing? Well, taken advantage of maybe, I guess, but you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, this is a perfect example. Like, I think the space now has kind of become associated with me personally.
Of course.
And so I used to have my office right in the front as people are walking by. And, you know, I'm trying to get work done. And it's just constantly a revolving door of people coming in, sharing their stories, which I love. That's the best part of my job. But it does disrupt what I need to get done. I've actually had to go into the back and way out in the back by the server room, tucked in a corner where nobody can see me. People still don't know where I am. And then when they do come and find me, they're like, oh, I didn't know you moved back here. But I'm like, yeah, you know, I just get more work done when I'm back there.
Right.
But I do really appreciate the fact that people see me and they associate the space with not just a space, but it's with me and my staff. My staff is a reflection of me. And I tell them, we're not here just to be a receptionist. We're here to be connectors. We're here to be, you know, a concierge. It's kind of like an all-in-one package. And you know,
hospitality is one of your big words.
Absolutely.
Same thing you hear the BBB. That's what I love about the BBB. The hospitality is like over the top here.
And it's true because you want to feel like you're
special.
Special.
Yeah. At the end of the day, we all want to be special.
Yeah. You know, and everyone should be, you know, and these are not cheap places, right? These are not like places that everyone can afford. So people are, you know, putting a lot of, you know, investment into these kind of spaces. So you want to make sure that they feel like they get their money worth. And for me, I'm always thinking about trying to figure out ways to add value, maybe non-monetarily, but sometimes monetarily, just add value wherever you can. And there are ways to do that. There are creative ways to do that, I think.
I love that whole idea of hospitality. It's like one of the things that Matt Failing said, like, you know, that's who we hire. We want to hire people from high-end hotels, people that have that mindset of,
absolutely,
of high-end hospitality.
Yeah, I just got back from our conference, our vast co-working, our parent company, umbrella company conference in Orlando last month. And the head of hospitality for Ritz-Carlton was a keynote speaker because we were staying at the Marriott and they're part of the Bonvoy family. And that is their entire mantra is hospitality.
Right? Right.
They gave a story about this family that was visiting one of their hotels down in Florida on a family trip. The kid left their teddy bear behind and then went home and the kid was in devastation. The family called the hotel. The hotel, I mean, what they could have done was just put it in a box and send them a note saying, thank you for your, you know, stay. Here you go. Send it back to them. They went above and beyond that. Well, you know what they did? It was really creative what they did. They actually took the teddy bear, I think it's whatever stuffed animal it was, and they took pictures of it with the staff saying, oh, here's the teddy bear now enjoying a seat by the pool. Here he is having a cocktail at the bar or whatever. I don't know the exact specifics. And then they wrote a note to the kid saying, hey, you know what? I know you missed your teddy bear, but you know, he liked this place so much that he decided to stay back a little bit and did all these things and then sent them pictures of these with back with the teddy bear to the kid. Now, think about that example and how that family now is probably a client for life. A lot of this stuff is not just, you can't just be in a regular space because A, there's a lot of competition and B, you know, they're paying a pretty penny for the space that you're providing. And C, if we're not trying to improve upon the workplace experience from what we had before COVID, then what are we doing? You know, there's no point in doing this, right? So we want to make sure that that's why we call sort of the future of workspace. You know, I don't take those words lightly because I do think that things are evolving and they're still evolving. And the way we're going, it is the future, but you know, we want to constantly improve on that too.
So what's it look like 3 years from now, John? Things go well and you kind of sitting here in your fantasy going, all right, what's the vision for the future? What's things look like 3 years from now?
I think
what's work look like? What are you guys up to?
Yeah, well,
what's going to happen?
3 years from now,
you heard it here first.
Yeah, 3 years from now. Hopefully, for me personally, I mean, I have ambitions to expand, so I'm constantly looking right now. I have a couple of deals that I'm currently in talks with.
So multi-location.
Yeah, I mean, every franchisee out
San Diego.
Oh yeah, but other Venturex franchisees that I know of are all ambitious. We're trying to open many locations. So I'm hoping to do the same.
But I live in PB, just so you know.
Yeah. Well, we are looking on coastal San Diego. It just happens to be, you know, a very expensive space.
La Jolla though, right?
Yeah. But just very expensive space. And so, and I think the office market industry has not completely shifted yet. And I think that still is an ongoing process. It'll take some time. I think does need to be an awakening of some sorts from the office landlords out there that, okay, we're not getting 2019 back.
It's a new day.
It is. And it's a one-way street. I mean, clearly, you know, it's a genie out of the bottle moment that I continue to use as an example is once you give people a taste of working remote and working hybrid, working with flexible ability to work from a cafe or from the home or from a co-working space, you're not getting that back. Companies are not getting that back. And I can, you know, bet my career that that is not going to happen. So what you have to do is adapt to that. There are some property owners that see the writing on the wall and they are adapting. They're either disposing of assets that they know is not recoverable, or they are starting to go into the space where they're offering flex as an option for their client base.
They're creating that option.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And yeah. The big names too. You know, like the Irvine companies,
your future competition, John.
No, it's okay though. I mean, the competition is fine because the demand is growing.
But if you do the concierge part and the high hospitality piece that probably the Irvine companies are going to do,
right?
You always have a space.
Right. Because that's a whole different story. But anyway, so 3 years from now, I hope to own or be operating at least one more location, hopefully two more. I think that the industry itself is going to, like I said, continue to evolve. What we're seeing now is because of the transition that's happening from the enterprise segment of the office industry, we're starting to get a lot more requests for team space, right? Meaning 15, 20, 50 people offices. And when I say 50 people, that doesn't mean an office that has 50 desks, because what's happening is out of those 50 people, they're coming and going.
No one's there at the same time.
No one's there at the same time. So what we recommend is you get an office. If you have 50 people locally, you get an office that can accommodate maybe 65% of them. So if this is a 4-person office, you get 10 of these, that's 40 people, right? That can accommodate maybe 65, 70 people, because those people will inevitably be coming and going.
Yeah,
right. And you're never going to really have them all there at the same time. And if you do, then you just provide them overflow space, because there's always going to be an office or two empty here and there. And that's where the whole flexibility comes in. And that's where I think it's changing. And so now what I'm kind of doing is I'm going a little bit contrarian and kind of swinging the other way, so that my next space that I open up is going to have maybe at least one option for a team of 20 to 30 employees to use.
Well, you're kind of got the model, right? That the T-Mobile, right?
Right, exactly.
They've already shown up here. So
yeah,
and expectations to, more of that.
Yeah, and to continue on that topic, I've actually had to now start breaking down walls to combine offices, because 3 years ago, all the intel said, you need to build out a bunch of 1- and 2-person offices. Well, what that left me with was less bigger offices for, 8 to 10 people. So I actually recently had to do this twice. I had to combine 4 2-person offices into an 8-person by knocking down 4 walls. And then the other one was a 4-person office side by side, knocked that wall down, and now it's an 8-person office.
Because you want people together, you want people connecting.
Yeah, right? The beauty of this thing is like you're seeing these companies grow within your space, right? So both of those examples, the first example, they actually came in as a virtual client only, meaning the CEO of the company lived locally. He only used our space for mail. So we have virtual offices as one of the options, right? And he was using us just to collect his mail, because he was getting a lot of mail. He does something in the medical industry. Next thing you know, he just wants a 1-person office where he has one employee come in, handle the mail, do the billing, all that stuff. And then he's realizing, okay, you know what? This person that's in-house is being very productive. Let's bring all of them back a few days a week. So now he went from a 1-person office to a 4-person office to now an 8-person office.
Nice.
And that all happened within 18 months.
That's what we'd like to see.
Yeah. Right. And it was really, really amazing to see. And that's happened twice now in the last 2 years. So.
Well, let's shift a little bit. Let's talk about you.
Oh boy.
How the heck did you get here, John? What's the story? You got quite the background in finance and Wall Street and.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
Even international too. Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of stories. You know, I grew up in LA, 20 years, immigrated to LA when I was 4. So this is going back to 79. Went to school there, high school, graduated, went to UCLA. After college, I've always had aspirations to work in finance and Wall Street. I read all the finance books like Liar's Poker.
Saw the movies.
Wall Street. And, I didn't know what to expect, because if you're not in that environment, you don't know what roles are out there.
Yeah, that's going to be doggy dog right back there.
Yeah, and then my sister ended up going to New York for med school. So I visited her a couple of times in the late 90s. When I went to New York City is such a dynamic place. It's just an energy magnet, right? So first time I went there, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then I visited her a second time. And that's when I made up my mind. I'm going to move here. I don't care what it takes. I'm going to get a job in finance. I don't know what kind of job. I'm just going to, you know, so
I want to be here
pretty much. So late 99, I having this aspiration, I took a final trip out there. I had one friend that I knew out there who lived in the Bronx. And I said, okay, let me go do some recon and see what job market's like. So I went out there, talked to some staffing agencies and said, oh yeah, we can place you in a temporary role here or there. And I was like, okay, that's it. So I came back home, bought a one-way ticket the next week. And And 2 days before the new turn of the century, bought a one-way ticket out to New York City and arrived. And my friend from the Bronx came and picked me up. And I stayed with my sister for 4 months, sleeping on her couch, and just did odd jobs like these temporary work that they would send me on. These staffing agencies would send me on, say, okay, you know, you have a job at Bank of America for, it's a 2 week project or whatever. And I just wanted a foot in the door, and not having any connections coming from a poor background, I just wanted a foot in the door somewhere. I knew that my work ethic can eventually get me to where I wanted to go. And luckily one of those roles took me to UBS, one of the big investment banks. And it was supposed to be a short-term role. It ended up being a 9 month role. And during those 9 months, I interacted with the trading desk for government bonds at UBS. The head of the desk really liked me, so he eventually hired me on full time, and that was it. That was basically
the file, folks. Just get in the door, right?
Yeah. And work hard and see
what happens.
And one thing that it taught me was, you know, in finance, you see all the, you know, the investment bankers, you know, you see the analysts, research analysts, you see the bond salesmen, the bond traders, the stock equity traders, the hedge funds. What you don't see is, for every one of those, there's like two or three back office personnel that does compliance, that does reporting, that does P&L, that does, you know, all sorts of different things that you could potentially get a job in. And then just, if you have the wit and the brains to do it, you can work your way up eventually. You know, you don't necessarily need to go to an Ivy League. I mean, obviously that's easier, but but it's not really easy to get into an Ivy League. So, right. You know, if minor you really detail. Wanted to pursue a career in finance, you can go that way. I mean, it's risky, but you can do it. And then eventually, even if you don't make it to the what's called the front office role, where you're on the front line trading side or on the investment banking side doing M&A or, you know, equity research or, you know, doing IPOs and stuff like that, there's a lot of like support roles that you can make a really, really great career out of. So that's the route I took because, you know, LA is not a big financial hub, A, and B, I didn't have too many connections. I didn't have any connections. So I just wanted my foot in the door. And that took me to New York, my first job at UBS. And then that took me to my second bank that recruited me over. And then that bank sent me overseas to London first for a couple of years.
How was that?
You know, it's funny. London, I have a lot more fond memories about now than I did when I lived there. So
often that's the way it goes.
So what I mean is when I lived there, I wasn't a huge fan of it. I think it's also the part fact that, you know, it's my first time being overseas. I didn't know anybody. When I moved there in September of 08, it was late in the year. So the sun was set at 3 p.m. So that was something that I'd never seen before.
That would kill me.
Yeah,
and I hate the short days we have here.
Yeah. You know, London weather is already like foggy and gloomy as it is. So I think that was kind of set me off in a not the greatest, you know, experience experiencing a new city. Eventually, you know, I did come to like it a little bit, but I still wasn't a huge fan of it then. And then a bigger role came up, an opportunity came up in Tokyo that I knew I wanted to do because I'd been there before and I love Tokyo. From London, that took me to Tokyo.
So you got to see the world.
Yeah. But the funny thing is now I really wish that I could have stayed in London longer because I think back to the time when I was there and like, you know, there's a lot of great things about London as well. One of them being, A, you can travel to a bunch of different countries, but also just UK also has its own, you know, unique and amazing places and things to do. So
it's funny how that goes, right? When you're in the middle of something, it's like, and then you leave, you think back about, oh man, I had these opportunities. It was there. That was awesome back then. Yeah.
Yeah. And then so from Tokyo, I got recruited again from a hedge fund that took me to Hong Kong and I was there for 3 years. And then, so I was overseas about almost 8 years and then came back to New York. And when we came back to New York, my wife got pregnant. And I did not want to raise a child in New York City. So I asked to be transferred. We had a satellite office in Miami. So
did you meet your wife in New York or is that?
No, I actually met her in Tokyo.
Tokyo, okay.
Yeah. And then we got married when I was living in Hong Kong. So we did a destination wedding and, you know, so obviously.
And she's your partner in the current business, yeah?
In name only. So I'll get to that in a second, but it's real, that's an interesting story that we can talk about.
That's for, a side what? Story, the husband and wife team, yeah.
No, exactly. We were in Miami for 4 years. That's when we went through COVID. That's actually when I lost my job because I was trading for this hedge fund. And, you know, if you know anything about markets, when something like that hits and you have the wrong positions on, it's game over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate because up until COVID, like the start of 2020, in the first 3 months of 2020, it was probably the best start I've had to my career in terms of performance. Mm. So when COVID hit, it just completely went 180. I had always kind of eyed an exit from the business. At that point, I was 21 years into the business and I was starting to get a little bit, you know, tired and, you know, like the stress was catching up.
Yeah,
and
it's stressful.
It is a very stressful industry. I could feel my, like the health wise, it was not very good for me long-term. So I started to look for ways to exit the industry and the business. And knowing that I wanted to come back to California because that's where I'm from, my sister lives here in San Diego. And so I started looking for businesses to buy. Even before when we were living in Miami and a couple of years before COVID hit, I was starting to look for businesses to buy in San Diego.
Okay. And you're getting ready.
Yeah, I was getting ready. And then when COVID hit and I lost my job and I said, okay, what, this is a sign. Just, you know, so we sold our house, moved back here. And I started looking, I had been looking before. Ironically enough, the whole COVID experience, I think, led to an explosion of people wanting to own businesses. I was competing with people that just had a lot of deep pockets and any business that was even viable and profitable, it was just gone. So during late 2020, 21, 22, it was really difficult to buy a business here. Because, you know, San Diego attracts a lot of people. People want to live here, but it's not cheap to live here. So
yeah,
you need
and a
to,
lot of people came COVID.
This post-COVID,
big,
yes.
Big absolutely. Destination place for a lot of people.
Yeah, and you need to make decent money here in order to live here. The standard living here is so expensive. Anything that came up that looked reasonably attractive, it was gone. I mean, I was competing with people that were just, you know, it was similar to the housing market back then. Like they're just LOIs, going over asking. And I realized, okay, I can't compete with this. Let me go look to start something. And so I was looking on all the business broker sites and then the VentureX ad popped up. Looked into it. I didn't really understand the business. The name VentureX to me made it sound like it was more like an incubator. Where
yes, it does. First time I went there, I was going there for a cause thing. That's what I thought you guys were. It was like
yeah.
Some sort of
you offer space in exchange. Yeah. You offer space in exchange for equity. Well, I couldn't do that. I needed income. I kind of put it to the side and then I saw it again a couple weeks later. I dug a little bit deeper. Just put it, submitted my name and the salesperson called me. And then I asked him, like, hey, is this like an incubator? They're like, no, this is actually a viable business. And that's when I started to really dig into it. And then kind of had like that light bulb moment, like, wait, we just came out of COVID. I know that working from home was not as disastrous as many feared it would be. So the whole flexible remote work works. People are not going to want to go back to an office. This is may actually end up being like that perfect middle ground for companies. And so it was a leap of faith, but it was a kind of a calculated leap of faith that, yeah, this is going to be the future. And luckily, you know, it was because, you know, it was a big risk. These spaces are not cheap to build out, you know, and these are large footprint sizes. A 20,000 square foot is not small.
Yeah, it's a big space you have over there. Yeah,
co-working spaces typically, you know, historically have always been like just a few thousand square foot. You have some of the bigger competitors like WeWork that would take out massive amounts of space, but they also ran into their trouble because of that. It was a big risk for me financially, but I just kept the faith that, you know, this model was going to work. And so luckily it has worked. You know, obviously you make a lot of mistakes along the way, especially for first time entrepreneurs. But I often tell people, you know, like when people ask me for advice or share some stories, I always tell them, you know what, the best advice that you're going to get from me are based on the mistakes that I made, you know, because.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, you got a lot of entrepreneurs that are working there. So you being one's important.
Yeah.
You get it. You understand it.
And when I was in the hedge fund industry and I was managing money, you know, you ask any trader on Wall Street or hedge funds or, you know, on the sell side, they will tell you almost exclusively that you always remember your big losses. You rarely remember your big gains. It's absolutely true. Yep. And for me as well. So I've made a lot of mistakes financially, investment wise in the past. And so I try to use that to kind of maybe help guide others to avoid those as well.
So for lunch, you can give me some guidance on that, John. Well, believe it or not, we got to put a bow on this little sucker here. I always like to end it with, what's like the one big thing you want people to remember? If they didn't remember anything else out of this conversation, what's the one big idea?
I want people to remember they like to be generous. And I think that if you ask people, they will agree with that. You know, generous, almost to a fault, but, you know, coming from a background and upbringing where, you know, we didn't have a lot and, you know, we struggled a lot. I always feel like I put myself in the other person's position. You know I'm not trying to save the world here, but it is something that is really near and dear is that trying to help people as much as I can. So obviously I do have to first and foremost stay in business, but wherever I can, I try to be as generous as possible.
And that's why we have you on the podcast, John.
Thank you.
That's how I know you, because you're being generous, right?
Thank you.
I know you through Kaz, so it's fantastic.
Appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you coming in the studio today and sharing your amazing experience with the things you're doing out here in our community and being generous and supporting lots of nonprofits along the way. And it's awesome. Really appreciate that.
So thank you, Jeff.
Keep up the good work.
I appreciate it.
Well, that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best. We're all counting on you.